You're listening to Let's Talk Macro,
brought to you by Bandhan Mutual Fund.
Hello and welcome to another episode in our podcast series, Let's Talk Macro, the series on macroeconomics by Bandhan Mutual Fund, where we really bring you conversations, spanning global and domestic macroeconomic themes and topics, which are really relevant and important topics of conversation at the moment. I'm Ahalya, and joining me today is Srijit Balasubramanian, economist in the Fixed Income Fund Management team. Hi, Srijit. How are you doing?
I'm good, Ahalya. How are you?
Very, very well. So it's really interesting. Today's conversation, you know, unlike some of the others we've had, is actually very topical, very seasonal, if I may say so. Yeah. So the southwest monsoon season rainfall in India is crucial for agriculture and its production. And, you know, it's interesting because it impacts the entire economy through different links, right? Linkages, rather. So in today's conversation, we're actually going to look at the significance of the monsoon season rainfall. What are the different factors that have impacted it in the previous years? The effect that it has on consumer price inflation, and also what supply side measures are available to the government to ease any potential negative effects of errant rainfall. So you ready, Srijit? Let's dive into this conversation.
Sure. Let's go.
Okay, so let's just dissect the significance of the monsoon season rainfall, which comes to us traditionally from June to September every year. Can you tell us about, you know, why it's so important for the rural economy specifically, and also how it's going to impact the larger economy and, you know, those linkages that we mentioned? What are those linkages?
Sure. So getting straight to the key numbers. So if you see, 75% of annual rainfall in India happens only during the southwest monsoon season. Now, the important point here is also that the Kharif crop sowing season coincides with this period, that is June to September, like you mentioned, although most of the sowing is typically done during July and August. 50% of annual food grain production and more than 80% of annual rice production is from this Kharif season. Also, area under different crops is, you know, rain-fed to different degrees, meaning some are more dependent on rainfall while some are more covered by irrigation. So, for example, for rice, which is the main Kharif crop, share of area irrigated is around 60%. So a good part is also rain-fed. For wheat, area irrigated is much higher at 90% plus, as it is not grown in the Kharif season, but during the following Rabi season, which is from October. So for rice, the main Kharif crop, timely and adequate rainfall is really important. This rainfall also fills up the reservoirs which are used for irrigation during the Rabi season, which is the following season, that is. In fact, the soil moisture at the beginning of the Rabi season, which is important for sowing, is also impacted by the monsoon rainfall. So this is just one part of the story. The other part is that rainfall impacts agriculture production and in turn related sectors, let's say tractor sales, for example. But it importantly has an impact on private consumption, particularly rural consumption, as a good part of rural income is from farming. Now, the crucial aspect is therefore also the effect on inflation. Ceteris paribus, shortfall in production will impact crop prices and thus food inflation directly. Rice, for example, has a weight of close to 5% in our CPI basket, which is not small. This can technically push up input prices also in related sectors. Now, there can also be a second round effect of private consumption demand on inflation. So it's not a straightforward link. This year, rainfall, its impact on production and inflation will be even more closely watched, because last year witnessed a massive drop in wheat production due to heat waves, if you remember. Even in March this year, just a month ago, we had unseasonal heat wave-like conditions and unseasonal rainfall in some areas, just as wheat procurement was about to begin. So we're actually getting into this monsoon season this time on the back of a hit to wheat production and some recent uncertainty as well.
Right. Okay. Thank you for that overview. That's a great way to actually start the conversation. We also were wondering, you know, about the different factors that impact monsoon rainfall. In fact, we keep hearing about El Nino, and that could really reduce rainfall this year. Is that one true? And, you know, could you also talk to us about the other factors that we need to keep in mind when assessing this entire situation?
So there are many factors which impact rainfall in various countries, and meteorological departments study, track and research various factors and weather phenomena. In fact, the interaction among these various factors and its net effect is one area where a lot of research is done. Now, for India, the main factors are our meteorological department, that is the IMD, looks at our the El Nino, the Indian Ocean Dipoles, and the snow cover over northern hemisphere. Of these three, El Nino is a weather phenomenon. Essentially, this happens every few years where the surface temperature at, you know, central and eastern parts of the Pacific Ocean is warmer than usual. This is typically associated with the lesser rainfall in India, but this is not the case always. So if you look at the last 15 El Nino years, let's say during 1951 to 2022, six years, that is 40%, witnessed normal or above normal rainfall. Monsoon rainfall, that is, in India. Now, from 2001 to 2020, so it's like in a span of 20 years, India has experienced 7 El Nino years, and 4 of them experienced drought and a decline in kharif production. I'm just giving these examples primarily because it's clearly not a given that if El Nino happens, India's monsoon will at least be, you know, below normal. It all actually depends on the timing, duration, magnitude, and the peak of the event. That is, you know, essentially when it begins, how long it lasts, the overall magnitude, that is whether it is a weak or a strong El Nino, and when the peak is reached alongside monsoon rainfall. So all these actually matter. The other factor is the Indian Ocean Dipole, which is the temperature difference between two points or poles, again, you know, between the western and eastern poles of the Indian Ocean. A positive IOD there is typically good for rainfall in India, but here again, this is not a given. The third factor highlighted by the IMD, particularly this time, is the snow cover over the northern hemisphere, which normally has an inverse relationship with monsoon rainfall. So these are the three important factors, if you want to call, you know, call it, which impact rainfall. And the IMD has actually previously said the relationship between IOD, the Indian Ocean Dipole, and Indian monsoon is not as strong as that between El Nino and monsoon. So that relationship is also a little different. Then again, you know, it all depends on the details of the respective factors, these three, and also how they interact.
All right. So those are sort of the rundowns of the general factors that we need to keep in mind, right, when taking a look at rainfall on the economy. But this year, Srijit, what are some of, you know, the current forecasts? What are they looking like? What are the, you know, what are the factors? Are there any new ones that we need to keep an eye out for? I also understand the various international meteorological departments have provided their forecasts. So how did those look in comparison to the IMDs?
Okay, so let's begin with the IMD. Its first forecast from mid-April for monsoon rainfall this year is for it to be normal and 4% below the long period average, which is just at the end of the range for normal. It also gave probabilities for various outcomes. Now here, although there is a 35% probability of normal rainfall, there is a 51% probability of below normal or deficient rainfall, while the probability for above normal or excess is only 14%. So this suggests the overall balance of probabilities is likely for rainfall to be just normal or below that. For the three factors, like the ones which we just discussed, the IMD expects El Nino conditions to develop during the monsoon season, most likely during the second half. But it also expects positive Indian Ocean Dipole and observes that snow cover in the northern hemisphere is actually below normal, and continues to reiterate that there is no one-to-one relationship between El Nino and rainfall, while noting that the other two factors can be supported. You know, this is the IMD side of the story. The other two entities which provide forecasts are the US Climate Prediction Center and the Australia Bureau of Meteorology. The US CPC sees a 60-odd percentage chance of El Nino developing between May and July, from neutral conditions currently, that is, while the Australian Bureau sees a 50% chance of El Nino this year. One thing to generally note here is the accuracy of forecast, because everyone gives out forecast, but the accuracy keeps changing. The accuracy at this point in time is typically a bit lower, but that keeps improving as we move forward into the season. We'll have updated forecasts from US EPC and Australia Bureau also in about a week. And the IMD will issue second monsoon season forecast at the end of May, where it'll not just update the full season forecast, but it'll also give probabilities for various outcomes. It'll give forecasts for various regions for July and August months separately. So all that should be quite useful, because I think the most important thing, or the, what really matters about monsoon rainfall, is not the headline number of shortfall or surplus, but it really is the temporal and spatial distribution, which is nothing but rainfall over time and across regions. This is what really matters for kharif sowing also, and therefore the, you know, the economic channels thereafter.
Okay, nice. So I think the next step in this conversation is to really look at how all of these factors, how the situation is going to play out and what the impact is going to be on inflation, right? So while we're keeping an eye out for the accuracy of the forecast, like you just said, especially for El Nino, what exactly is going to be, you know, from an economic sense, the impact on inflation? You did mention that there are direct and indirect channels of impact. So what are some of the, you know, those noteworthy aspects and linkages that we need to be taking a look at, and which parts of the CPI are impacted most, and are there any mitigating factors there?
Yeah, like I said, there could be a direct impact on inflation if there is, let's say, a meaningful shortage in production. The impact will also depend on the weight the crop has in the CPI basket. And for rice, which is the main Kharif crop, it's under 5%, which is, like I said, not a small number. Now, this could also have an impact on sectors where this crop is a major input. The key point here is, just like we noted for the relationship between El Nino and monsoon, the relationship between monsoon rainfall and consumer price inflation is also not linear. It's also not one-to-one. There have been years where rainfall is deficient. For example, if you look at 2014 and 2015, when we had back-to-back deficient rainfall, or even 2018, you know, when rainfall is deficient, food inflation did not pick up materially. Now, this is because inflation for rice and wheat, the main cereals, are also driven by various other factors, like stock levels, minimum support prices or MSPs at which these crops are procured by the government agencies, global prices, and so on. So the MSP hikes each year, if you look at it, have been quite benign for a while now. Global prices of cereals have been softening, and stock levels of rice have been quite okay, although it has been quite low for wheat because, you know, the heat wave last year. But wheat is a rabi season crop, like I said, and procurement is progressing, although it's a bit delayed. So the impact on inflation is from a combination of these various aspects. In fact, high food inflation years in, for example, if you look at 2019, was driven more by prices of perishables like vegetables, which tend to be very volatile, and not exactly by cereals, because there are these other factors. Now, on mitigating factors that you mentioned, the main one here could be supply-side measures by the government. Now, this includes measures right from agri-advisory, fertilizer subsidies, trade restrictions like the ban on wheat and, I think, broken rice exports done last year, changes in import and export duties, MSP hikes, in fact, relaxation of procurement norms, as is being done for wheat now, and even farmer compensation for drought or crop damage, you know, that is announced by states and so on. Now, all these government measures ease farm distress, but then you have to look at the other side also, where there is, for example, farm income, depending on the production volumes, prices, and the supply side measures, will have an impact on consumer spending, and that will have a second round effect on inflation also. So you'll have to sort of look at both sides. And in that context of second round impact on inflation, you'll also have to look at, you know, farm input costs, how that is growing, rural wage growth, etc., and those become important as well.
Right. Okay. So Srijit, you know, I understand that it's actually a gamut of factors, not just the shortage in rainfall or sowing that has a bearing on inflation. Yeah. But that it's interesting because this year is going to be a different year then in that sense from the previous years. And, you know, I think just to wind up, the southwest monsoon rainfall is obviously really important for the rural economy as well as the overall economy and the economic scene in the country. But, you know, that also depends on various factors. One of these, as we've learned today, is El Nino, which has a higher probability based on forecast this year. But then again, not all El Nino years are deficient rainfall years for India, because like we learned, other factors, yeah, you know, like the Indian Ocean Dipole, for which the forecast is favorable as of now, also matters. So I think it's going to be, you know, just a matter of paying close attention, doing the best we can. And, you know, even if the monsoon rainfall is deficient, it doesn't mean that food inflation will automatically pick up, because there are other aspects and government measures which will also play a role.
Yeah, definitely. So to add there as well, Alia, what ultimately matters, like I mentioned, is the spatial and temporal distribution of rainfall. So let's hope this is not very skewed and supports sowing this time. So once we are in June and the season kicks off, we'll start looking more closely at, you know, the actual rainfall distribution, sowing progress, reservoir levels, and so on. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think this has been a very interesting conversation. We definitely do have to look out for all of those things. And that's pretty much it for, you know, this podcast, where we really explored the Indian monsoon season rainfall and all of its links to the economy. Very interesting links as well. Thanks, Srijit, for giving us your insights and for helping us explore all of this.
Thank you.
And thank you to our listeners as well. You know, as always, we'll be back with another episode of Let's Talk Macro. But in the meantime, just sort of relish this conversation. I'll catch you on the next one.
Mutual fund investments are subject to market risks. Read all scheme-related documents carefully.